Thank you. Sure. So I was just curious what came up for you. Does anybody like to share or...
Hi. Yes, during the meditation...
You're Sue, right?
I'm Sue, yes.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. During the meditation, which was wonderful, it appears I'm unable to get to name the hurt, to get a hold of the feeling that I'm feeling. Although I could process compassion and forgiveness and to myself and others as we went through it, but naming that, what I was feeling in my mind's eye, picture of what was happening.
Right, so stay there for a moment. Do you have a body sensation, a tactile sensation of anything? What does your stomach, your heart feel like, your face?
I can't name it.
Feel it? Do you sense it?
Do I sense it? Tightness. Okay, heart.
Yeah, see?
Upper chest.
You're just there.
Thank you.
That's all that's needed. And then just to come back to that, because the trick is that tactile sensations are the portal to the present moment.
Thank you.
Hi. Your name is?
I'm Barbara.
Barbara.
What really touched me is when you were talking about equating forgiveness with generosity. And I never equated those before, but it total sense, because you can't really forgive unless you can also be generous of heart and giving and giving. Because I thought then, well, if you were tight and it was hard for you to give generally, how can you then also forgive? So it does go hand in hand, that forgiveness and wanting to give out,
right,
give out in generosity. So thank you for that insight. That was really helpful.
Well, you know, I didn't have it either until yesterday.
No.
By the way, it happens is my husband said, people this year, I'm with my teacher, Jack Kornfield, with his encouragement, I'm writing this book, and which actually the title changed a little bit, but it's Mending the Heart, 5 Practices to Cultivate Compassion. And so I have it rewritten already 3 times. But in a way, that makes me think through things right now a lot. Oh. And it just actually happened as I rewrote this talk that I realized, forgiveness and generosity really comes from the same heart space.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about the research that says that in a way, if we give, that is more correlated with happiness than taking or receiving. So in a way, it makes us happier.
Well, I hope you include that in your book. It's great.
Thank you.
Sometimes when I'm thinking about forgiveness, I try to run through my mind some of the episodes in Jesus' life.
Yeah.
And the one that always comes up for me is a kind of a prayer when he's being crucified, and he says the prayer, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. At least that's as much as we have recorded. I rather suspect a lot more was said during all these episodes, but that remains to be filled in later. But the question then is, what kind of forgiveness is this kind of prayer that says, it almost says, Father, forgive them, because I sure can't, you know. Forgive them, you forgive them, because it's more than I can handle. Now, is that possible?
Yeah, I think that can be. We can come to this place where we just feel overwhelmed, or it's more than we can muster.
Yeah.
And I think then it's actually a very, I don't know if skillful is the right word, wise thing to do, is to just kind of surrender. You know, it's like, I surrender. I can't. This is too much for me. Please help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bob remembers, some of you remember when I stood up and talked about the man I couldn't forgive and the dream I had, where God helped me forgive him in my dream by sending him as a little child, a wounded, a suffering child. And I think that is how God helps us when we are unable to forgive. He will step in by dreams or some a totally unexpected way. You will suddenly find, yes, you can open your heart to that. And it's very hard to know you want to forgive, and somehow it keeps coming back and back. My problem is, how do you forgive an institution?
Well, maybe first the first and then the second, and then I also know you wanted to ask a question after.
I'm sorry, you'll be next.
So I was just thinking, you know, I work a lot with dreams. Actually, for 5 years we have this dream group where we first meditate and then work with dreams. It's really lovely. And I see dreams as a way. There's this one Indian teacher who wrote about work with dreams, Srimathaba Ashish, and he calls it the open window approach. So in a way what he says is, first when we see a dream, it's like looking into the mirror, you know. It shows us about ourselves, maybe what we haven't seen yet, you know, it's coming from the unconscious. But as we polish the window, it becomes a window. And people who know quite a bit about dream work and have worked with dreams, and that's the other thing I really love to do, is work with dreams, is dreams are wiser than us. So I actually like an approach to dreams where I really embody the images and let them come forward. Because I think if we go, oh yeah, I think this means that and that, you know, I'm the great analyst interpreting, I think we are kind of forfeiting what it could be. But if we allow the images to come forward and speak and to be there like this child, you know, then I don't know who the dream maker is, but he's very smart. And to make your enemy into this little boy is just, that's just what dreams do. They are just amazing. So thank you for bringing that up. Just really can recommend working with dreams. The other one was the institution. Well, I think an institution consists of people, no? So I would stay with the people to forgive. You might say at some point, well, this institution doesn't serve me and maybe I spend my time somewhere else. You know, you can do that. But
you don't even know who the people are necessarily.
Yeah.
You don't know the whole background. You only know that a great wrong was perpetrated. And nobody admitted it or told.
Yeah, well,
nobody asked,
do I know,
to be forgiven for making that dreadful set of conclusions that they came to.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean, you know, when we were probably talking about the same people, but
possibly.
I'm struggling with that too. For me, it works only when I think of individuals, you know. It's like, let's say when I read the files of the perpetrators who were that sick, you know, and their psychiatric files, and I say, oh my gosh, this is so sad, you know. It's like nothing to be condoned, and it's, but then I can say it's just tragic in a way, you know.
In my case, it was a series of things, and each one led to a different and worse solution. And the end of it was all one big cover-up, which has never been uncovered.
Really? Maybe you should talk to me afterwards. I might at least know where to refer you to. Let's do that.
I just want to let go of it myself. Mm-hmm. I finally come to the conclusion that there is not going to be any opening up of this situation, and I just have to move on, but it keeps nagging at me.
Well, let's talk after the...
Okay.
Yeah. And your name is?
Jackie.
Jackie.
I'm Patricia, and I think what she had was troubled with is probably very similar to what I'm troubled with. I find that we're in one world now, and what is happening all over the world is happening to me too. And this forgiveness has got to be extended to ISIS, has got to be extended to people that we don't even know are causing these problems. And I just wonder where this all leads in terms. I think Tutu is wonderful and what he's gone through as an example of what forgiveness really is. But I find that my life is troubled more than I would like by what's happening in the rest of the world.
Right. It's very hard to bear. And
I don't know really where one's responsibility begins or ends.
Well, that's probably a different question. It's different from forgiveness. You know, I think if we are becoming, let's say, social activists, but with hatred, we are probably less effective than when we maybe come with a certain wisdom and compassion, but we still are social activists. And one of my great heroes is a woman called Joanna Macy, and she's actually very good friends with my husband and me, so we have a lot of dinners where we talk about everything. And she says what is important is to rest in, that's a Buddhist word, bodhicitta, which is our wish for everybody to be free and well. So not just us. So we work for that. You know, we work with this bodhicitta, with this wish for everybody to be ultimately free and taken care of. But we don't know what the outcome is. She talks about the great turning or the great unraveling. You know, we don't know if there will be the great turning or the great unraveling. So in a way, just resting in this, I do my part and I'm really active in that, but I cannot control the outcome, is, I don't know, I don't know if that's the best way to look at it, but that's what helps me, because otherwise it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, it is overwhelming. No, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jim. As I recall, if I recall correctly, the early part of this book talks about institutions and that they have to be confronted, which is what Desmond Tutu did and his followers with apartheid.
Right.
And they changed it. But the institution has to admit they're wrong and do something about it.
Mm.
And there are some institutions, forgive me, like the Catholic Church, who are so large and there's no one person that I can go to make a change. And that's a dilemma. He doesn't address that.
Right.
But he addresses corporations and governments and that sort of thing. So he said very little about that, but it's different than the forgiveness that you have to give to individuals.
Well, and you know, as I said, I worked 12 years for the province of Santa Barbara, but and I don't know, they got me. I really tried. It's too big, you know, and it's too intertwined and it's too screwed up, honestly. And so, and there are too many self-interests, You know, I think there is a circling the wagon. You know, we have, in a way, loyalty. You know, they say, oh, well, we have to take care of our brothers. But what about the world? You know, it's like, and so I think, what can I say? And I think the world always has been full of that. In Greek times and Roman times and Chinese times, you know, seems to be part of the human condition to be like that, unfortunately. And so I again think we can only rest in bodhicitta, you know, in our work, like you said. Yeah. I don't have a solution for institutions. Unfortunately, I wish, but I don't.
Hi, Ruel. I'm Gloria.
Hi, Gloria.
I think you said at the very beginning something about, you didn't use the word willing, but that's something that I used to use. Help me, God, to become willing. And if I couldn't, then willing to become willing. I mean, it just, it was an opening. It was
like a Russian doll, you know.
Yeah, I have one of those. Mm-hmm. Actually, I love those dolls.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, that's good. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I wasn't going to mention it, but I think I will. I'd rather forgive the Catholic Church for its wrongs than ISIS. And I think we need to be confrontive and not kill the innocent. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm not saying anybody individually, but it needs to be stopped. I mean, we can't just say, I forgive you, ISIS, and move on. I mean, that's crazy. Pardon me. But
I think forgiving can never be condoning or whitewashing.
Exactly.
So I think that would probably be a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Anyway. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, I was told many moons ago that there are only so many major feelings like joy, sadness, anger, love. I forget what they were.
Is that Paul Ekman?
I don't know who it was, but there were only five major ones. Mm-hmm. Now I'm hearing, I feel whatever. There's like 50. And it's, you know, and they're good, because, but they're not like real feelings. They're more like
shades of gray.
Shades of gray. Very good, Tom. Anyway, if you could explain that, like I feel discounted. Is that emotions versus, I think what you were talking about, emotions, feelings, and something else you said. They're movements or...
Well, you know, I think, like, I did this training 5 years ago with Paul Ekman and Alan Wallace, Cultivating Emotional Balance, and he's supposedly one of the greatest researchers on emotions, and he had so and so many true emotions, and he counted only this and not that. I don't know. You know, I think I take, honestly, research with a grain of salt, you know.
Yeah.
I remember my mother was a physician, and she said every 5 years they said digitalis was good or it was bad. Then it was good, then it was... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's always another study that says... So I don't know how many true emotions there are and if there is an objective truth, you know. So they are probably more like primary colors. You know, like red, blue, green, yellow.
That's what I was thinking. Like, you know, when you feel joy, it's a definite feeling. Or
but
love.
Then green is quite, you know, green is really just a mix between blue and yellow. But it's quite green in its greenness. You know,
okay.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll just let that one go. Okay?
Yeah, you know, like, for example, there is anger and sadness, and then there is betrayal.
Yeah.
You might say betrayal is not a real emotion, but it's like green, you know, it's quite green. If you're betrayed, you know it, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, it's again, I wouldn't take it too literal.
Okay.
I guess that's my overall feeling about life. Don't take it too literal.
I know. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ed.
Hi, Ed.
You know, I don't have to like everybody, but I have to love everybody. I don't have to like everybody, but I do have to love everyone. So, in the spiritual sense, my higher power sense. The other thing with forgiveness, which I'm big on, I think that heals a lot better than physicians and medicine and everything, is that what is our motivation?
Yeah.
What motivates me to forgiveness? And this, once again, is something you already hit on, which is forgiveness should never be involved with what the outcome of the transaction would
be.
Forgiveness for me is just to clean my side of the street up. In other words, it's for me to get things clean on my side. And that predisposes that it doesn't matter what the answer is.
Yeah.
And I also have discovered in years of doing this that the words "I'm sorry" are kind of a conditional. The response can be conditional. But if you ask someone, "Please forgive me," that requires a positive or a negative response.
Yeah.
The difference being, like when I was in school, we had chalkboards, and you'd erase with an eraser.
Yeah.
You would see some of the dust remain. But if you erase with, at the end of the day, you did it with a wet rag, you know, and it really made it clean, completely gone, you know. So that, you can say, "I'm sorry, please forgive me." But I've had experiences where I've said, "I'm sorry," and the people put conditions on it, you know.
Yeah.
They say, "Well, if you don't do it again, or this happens, or that," you know, that doesn't wipe the slate clean at all.
Well, I have one idea. Stay there. you know, with the intention, you know, like in Buddhist philosophy, the intention is quite important, which is a little bit different from a goal. So let's say, I don't know if you come from the AA corner, I kind of have a sense you do. So there is, I heard quite often that there is this, is that the fourth step where you go to everybody and say sorry?
Ninth step,
okay. So
you have to go through the other eight before you get
Well, what I heard sometimes is people, you know, you say, well, you do that to wipe your side of the street clean. I think a little intention is good too. Because sometimes I have heard people saying, you know, I got this call. This person said, "I'm sorry," and then hung up. You know, so and it felt, was it for me or was it for them? You know what I mean? So I think to have, you know, I'm doing this because I have a wish that the energy between us is good again, or it's at least, you know, or at least that
That's the hope.
You know, I think it's important so that it's a little more than just cleaning up the side of your sidewalk.
Yeah, well...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I don't mean by cleaning up my side of the sidewalk. I mean that if it doesn't work out, for instance, I have made an advance towards this gentleman in the past in my life. And he was of a ethnic group that kind of hung on to things, you know. And and anyway, I did it in public, so I did it among the people that were involved. It was with a group. We were in a meeting. And I asked him, I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what I had harmed him. So I asked him, I said, you know, "I've done something to hurt you, I know, because of the way you're reacting to me. And I want to, you can tell me what it is, or you don't have to tell me what it is. Any way you want it, please forgive me." And he looked me straight in the eye and said, "No." So we walked out of that meeting, and he lived in my community. And I can tell you that when we walked down the street, he crossed the other side of the street so he wouldn't have to look me in the eye and pass me.
That's sad. You know, it's because...
It's sad. It's very sad.
Yeah.
But it's the truth. And that's what I mean about...
I
wasn't getting rid of guilt. That's the other thing. You should never do forgiveness to get rid of guilt.
Right.
Never. That should never be the motivation.
Okay. No, that I get.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was good. Well, thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Oops, sorry, there was just this gentleman. He came from way back there.
Okay.
You had the advantage sitting right there.
My name is Jude.
Hi.
I had to pass on this to you and for the group. Several years ago, a friend gave me a book. It was called Elena. Anybody recognize the title? Elena, it's a story of World War II as it was ending, and it's in the Albanian area near the Greek border.
Mm.
And there's a civil war. And there's this lady who has four children and an American husband who leaves to get a place for him so that he could send for him. She gets the children out, but she doesn't get out herself. The communists come in, they torture her, they harass her. She never criticizes them. All she can think of is her children, getting her children out. Now, the youngest son, named Nicholas Cage, who wrote this article, was in Reader's Digest as well as a book. He has nothing else but revenge in mind. And after the war, he goes back. And he's able to find out and to confront who was the man responsible for his mother's death. And so, the second time he confronts him, he's got a gun. And he's going to kill him. But he doesn't. And this is what I want to share with the group. The reason he doesn't, he says that if he had shot and killed this man, he would have broke with everything that his mother stood for. I remember this friend gave me the book. He says, Jude, when you read this book, if you don't cry, you're not human.
Thanks for that story. That's an amazing story.
I'm Jenny, and thank you. I just wanted to share a prayer that I came across. I'm not sure what time it was in Mother Teresa's life, but it was a prayer that showed change. And she said, I used to pray that God would change the world. And I used to pray that he would feed all the poor and the hungry. And I used to pray that so-and-so would be healed. And she said, and there were several other things. Then she said, now I pray that God will give me the strength to do my little bit in the world, whatever it is and whenever it comes up.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. That ditto, yes. Yeah. And actually, you asked me.
A little bit about releasing.
Releasing a relationship. Right. And again, it's quite a gray area. I think, well, I would hope that doing this internal process, the spiral of compassion and forgiveness, we might be a little bit more equipped to know whether we need to release or renew a relationship. And I would say sometimes I don't know for a while. You know, it's like well, it comes up because we talked so much about the Catholic Church. One of the persons I felt really hurt by in the end of my work was the vicar provincial, who was my best friend from school, Tom. And so, but then when he became part of the steering whatever committee, he basically, I felt, threw me under the bus, but, you know, protected his his institution, right? And so I'm going through, you know, do I need to release this or do I need to renew this? And so for a longest time I think I just release this. You know, it's like I understand, I actually have compassion, you know, I can see, you know, they have a lot of peer pressure to do what they are doing. You know, when they are holding, it's like a little bit like the crabs in the pot. If one wants to get out, the others who pull them back. I think that's how they are with each other, those friars, those church folks, right? They keep each other all boiling in the pot. And so, and they wouldn't let one do something else, right? And so, so I thought, okay, I release this. But then, one day, talking about dreams, I had this dream. I was in some medieval village, and I was sitting with Tom on a wall, and we hadn't seen each other for so long, and we were so glad to see each other again. And we were chatting, and then after this talk, he went this way and I went that way, because Tom and I, we gave groups for people with AIDS in the Castro for years. We have a long history of doing very good work, and then before things got bad much later. So my husband said, well, why don't you write him that you had this dream? And so then, sure enough, the day later, a message comes back from Tom. I had a dream about you too. And by the way, I'm coming to Santa Barbara. Do you want to have lunch? So we had lunch at Via Maestra, and we didn't talk about it, you know, who's right and who's wrong. We just basically had lunch, you know, so we didn't, I think if we start who's right and who's wrong, we kind of get lost. But so it was really nice, and so now I'm waiting for the next dream, you know, so and so so I don't know, but I think if a person is dangerous, you know, then you definitely have to, maybe you feel compassion for them. Let's say you have a wife-beating husband. Yes, maybe you feel compassion because he was beaten all his life and had an alcoholic dad and a mean mom and whatever, you know. But you may not want to go close to him. You know, you might extend compassion and maybe go as far as one day, maybe in 30 years, I want to let go of my resentment. But you might just say, you know, I'm in Santa Barbara, you are in Boston, I think we better stay that way. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do not know if I have, you know, the answer, but the best. And again, things can change, you know, like this. Yeah. Anybody else? Oh, okay. Thank you.